at 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump signs an executive order to begin dismantling the Department of Education, on which Congress has the final say. John Vallant with the Brookings Institute.
They can undermine the department's ability to carry out those core functions by basically laying off staff. And so what we've seen is essentially a shrinking of the staff at the department.
The Justice Department misses another deadline to answer a federal judge's questions about last weekend's deportations. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
They sent a lower-level Department of Justice official, perhaps too low, to say they may invoke a state secret defense to avoid answering those questions.
The NTSB issues recommendations for vulnerability assessments of 68 bridges in 19 states. It comes after Chair Jennifer Homendy says of last year's deadly key bridge collapse in Baltimore.
MDTA would have known the risk and could have taken action to safeguard the key bridge. Had they done that, the collapse could have been prevented.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News, your news roundup in a quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com.
A Badgers win in the tournament. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports. March Madness, the Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team with a victory today over the Montana Grizzlies. The final 85-66 in favor of the Badgers. Guard John Blackwell, leading scoring with 19 points. Stephen Crowell, 18. John Tanjay had 15 in all five Badgers players with double-digit points. Up next, they face Brigham Young on Saturday. Marquette is in Cleveland, where they'll face New Mexico tomorrow night, game time 6:25. How much will making it to the tournament for a fourth year in a row help the Golden Eagles? Head coach Shaka Smart.
I think a ton. Having been through the twists and turns of the NCAA tournament, I think both the wins that we've had and also the losses we've had taught us a lot of lessons, taught those guys a lot of lessons. When you get to the NCAA tournament, it does feel different. It still comes down to trying to be the best version of yourselves as a team and individually out there on the court.
That's Marquette Shaka Smart with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Winter is out and winning is in. It's our Break in the Spring statewide text to win contest on your local Civic Media radio station. Your daily shot at a Chula Vista getaway, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, or $100 cash. And every entry gets you closer to the grand prize, a brand new Verlo Queen mattress set complete with a mattress, sheets, protector, and pillows. Download the Civic Media app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Choose your station that gets set to win starting Monday, March 24th. It's time to break into spring with WXCO.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Matt Nair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. We're making America great again. Yes, we are. And we're going to do it on the backs of, well, working people. And we're going to bring down food prices. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to make America great. The U.S. Department of Agriculture had a press release that I got to read the whole press release because, and I rarely do this. It's just, it is so brilliantly written. It is such an important document for working people. Because understand, you, this could be you. According to the press release, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins today announced new actions to reduce burdens on the U.S. pork and poultry industries while allowing for greater efficiency while maintaining food safety standards. The directive instructs the Food Safety and Inspection Service to eliminate outdated administrative requirements that have slowed production and added unnecessary costs for American producers. So we're going to get rid of those overburdensome rules, you know, like inspecting the stuff safe, like making sure the lines are clean, making sure that we don't go back to the 1910s, you know? It goes on. America leads the world in pork and poultry production, and we are committed to ensuring our producers remain competitive on a global scale without being held back by unnecessary bureaucracy, said Secretary Rollins. Under President Trump's leadership, we are cutting unnecessary red tape, empowering businesses to operate more efficiently, and strengthen American agriculture, all while upholding the highest food safety standards. Now you go, well, that sounds great. We're gonna unleash the power of business. That's never ended poorly for people. We're going to unleash the corporate talents. The captains of industry are going to be able to really get to work. And how are they going to do that? Well, according to the press release, there's more. Under the new policy, FSIS, you know, I said Federal Safety and Inspection Service, they're going to extend waivers allowing pork and poultry facilities to maintain higher line speeds. Yeah, higher line speeds, ensuring that they can meet demand without excessive government interference. Now, understand, we used to strike over line speed ups. People fought, bled, and died for a line speed that didn't kill them. We're going to speed that up now. We're going back. Again, if you learn labor's history, you know we've been here before. Corporate America, the pendulum has swung to their side, and they're going to speed up the lines, and, you know, bad things are going to happen. Workers are going to get hurt, maybe killed. Processing is going to be poor. Diseases are probably come. Like bird flu, you got a handful of producers who control the majority of the eggs in the country, and then boom, they're a gazillion dollars a dozen. They go on to say, rulemaking to formalize these speed increases will begin immediately. Additionally, FSIS will no longer, here's the kicker, will no longer require plants to submit redundant worker safety data. As extensive research has confirmed, no direct links between processing speeds and workplace industries. Oh, really? Extensive research? And who did this extensive research? Who paid for this extensive research that said when you speed up production, when the cows or the chickens or the whatever, go, the turkeys go flying by and you're wielding the knife, that injuries don't go up as you go from, 10 birds an hour to 100? Now, they say these reforms will strengthen U.S. food production, reduce costs for producers, and support a more resilient supply chain. And again, I don't know how you make that argument with a straight face in any of this. I honestly don't know how you get there, knowing where we've come from, knowing why these regulations were put into place in the first place. Again, this comes back to we as voters, we as workers, we as consumers, we as just thoughtful human beings know that this press release is a giant, giant steaming turd. But it is dangerous, and it's going to be harmful for all of that, for the workers, for the consumers, for society. But you know what it's going to be good for? Yeah, they've alluded to it in the press release numerous times. It's all about the producers. It's all about the company. It's all about the profit margin. Yes, more for them. Because you know what they didn't say in here at all? That by doing this, costs are going to come down for consumers. Costs could be reduced for producers. Will they pass that along? And the answer is no. They're going to line their pockets with it. And what's going to happen is you're going to have workers who are going to have, you know, much more pain and misery. In fact, you know, as I was reading through this, I was remembering a guest we had on a couple of years ago who worked at a chicken processing plant somewhere down in the South, who said that in the break room, they had those, when you go into the bathrooms, you can get an aspirin or a condom or whatever. You put a quarter in, you get whatever you want. They had them all along the line. Any painkiller you wanted, any pain drug you wanted was right there for a cost, of course. But it was there because they knew The speeds that they were already forcing people to work under were already more than the human body could potentially do. But hey, you need a job, right? And now we're going to speed that up? We're going to do more of that? And you go, but Rick, you know, business corporations got to make money. Again, the pork and poultry industry, the vast majority of the country's production is in a handful of a couple of companies who are making wild profits. While when you go to the grocery store, the price keeps going up and up. This is going to do nothing to bring prices down. This is going to do nothing to help you as a consumer. But what it's going to do is it's going to harm workers. And it's going to harm workers in a way that they'll bury because, again, there'll be no safety data. And here's the best part. Since we're putting children back into this, we won't have to know that we've put kids back into the production facilities, dangerous production facilities, because we won't be reporting on it because of the bureaucracy. You know, it's the bureaucracy that's killing children, not these producers. You excited? You ready for eggs to come down to $1 a dozen? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Maybe remember last week we talked about U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup, who said, look, you know, all those people you fired, all those workers at the Department of Defense, Veterans Affairs, Agriculture, Energy, Department of Interior, the Treasury, all those people, you just said, you know what, you're gone. We're going to fire you. He said, yep, you can't do that. You got this due process thing. You kind of overstepped your bounds. Kind of curious how that's working out. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what led Judge Alsup to reinstate these fired probationary employees and maybe where things are now. I've asked my good friend Michael Sonato to come talk with us. Michael is a labor reporter over at The Guardian US. You can check out their website, theguardian.com. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, always a pleasure.
So walk me through what was the decision here? What led to Alsup bringing these probation employees back?
Well, we have Judge Alsup in California, and we also had a judge in Maryland just hours later issue a similar ruling, basically saying that all these firings of probationary workers was, you know, unlawful. The claim that they were fired for performance reasons was a completely fabricated lie. Judge Alsup had some choice words for the administration about that, and he ordered the reinstatement of probationary employees at a lot of the big departments. The judge in Maryland, that was more sweeping. So around 25,000 probationary workers were fired. More than 24,000 were ordered to be reinstated. And the process of that, they're supposed to give updates later this week on complying with that order. Judge Alsup also had an order issued this week because he was receiving reports that as soon as they were reinstated, some of these workers were being placed on administrative leave, which is in violation of the order that he issued. And he said, you know, you can't do that. We're waiting. From probationary workers, I've heard that they have been, reinstated, but the fears are, you know, the same, and it remains to be seen, whether their work will continue. It's been weeks, so these workers are getting back pay for the time off that they, between the, when they were fired and the reinstatement, which is, you know, a waste of millions of dollars for this administration that's supposed to be doing all of this for efficiency.
Exactly.
And legal costs, administrative costs. So a complete waste. It's a big loss for them. But, it's just the beginning of just a longer, broader fight of what we're seeing in the federal government.
Because a lot of folks, and me included, are thinking that this administration, they don't care about judges. They don't care about the rule of law. I'm a little surprised that they're putting people back to work. So I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop and to see which way they go after them now. And look, I can't imagine being one of those employees in the kind of hostile work environment that they have to face every day because of all this. Because you never know if you're going to come in today and we're firing you again. Not good. Not good. Under the guise of running government like a business, not a good way to run a business.
No, not at all. It's been a complete mess. The court orders, they've been slow, but they haven't been going their way at all. Yesterday with USAID, a judge ruled that the shutting down the agency was likely unconstitutional. Every way and manner in which the federal government with Elon Musk and Doge and the administration have been conducting these or attempting to fire federal workers en masse. It's been in violation of, laws, procedures, these workers' rights. They've had to reinstate workers after erroneously firing ones that they just didn't understand, like the workers and, yeah, and the nuclear capabilities. So it's just been haphazard. It's not surprising that a department named after a doggy meme coin doesn't know what they're doing and has been screwing everything up, lying about the savings that they've been making, breaking laws, it's just ongoing.
Yeah, I remember joking about, they fired the nuclear agency, the people who oversee the nuclear agencies and all that, the really, really smart people, and then couldn't figure out how to get them back. And at the time I said, look, while it appears to be incompetence, it's not just incompetence, it's they don't care. So, they're okay with smashing things without thought of what the repercussions are going to be, because they're dead set against government. So anything they can do to disrupt or destroy, they're all in favor of. So this may look like a loss, having to put these workers back to work. But ultimately, there's been all of this disruption. You've got disgruntled employees. You've got people who are working in hostile work environments who will probably want to leave. They're creating the kind of chaos and misery that they want. And long term, I think they're going to achieve their dream, which is to destroy our government even further.
That is clearly the strategy, because, they've been in office, less than 2 months now, and they've made all these sweeping changes. And if you've looked at actual audits and anything like that, it's a long process to figure out and understand, how departments or things actually work before you go in and start deleting things. But that's what they've been doing. It's just like haphazardly going in the day of, let's delete everything and then clean up the mess later. And, if there are court challenges and things that have to scale it back, which has been happening, and seems like that's going to be the norm for the next few years, then so be it.
No, I mean, this administration is getting slaughtered in the courts. I mean, I don't know if they're winning anything. Every time I turn around, another loss. But I keep coming back to it doesn't matter. They're still achieving their goal of proving that government doesn't work and that it's broken because they keep breaking it.
Yeah, absolutely. They are making all these cuts, scaring workers, intimidating them, violating the law, and it doesn't matter if weeks or months later it turns out that they have to walk back things. The damage that they're doing is already being done. So it's just very concerning for even looking ahead in a few years, if Trump's out of office and a Democrat takes office again, like how do they begin to fix the damage that they've caused already? Yeah. And that they will likely continue doing so with majorities in the House and Senate. There are no Republicans willing to step up to them. They've had a couple issues, some timid responses of possible concern, but they're unreliable, and even Democratic leadership doesn't seem incompetent on figuring out a way to fight back against these efforts,
which is just again, they're Democrats, so I get accused of attacking Democrats a lot, but I wish I didn't have to. I wish they were functional. I wish Chuck Schumer weren't the minority leader in the Senate. And I'm looking at Hakeem Jeffries, and I'm going, not much better since he came to Schumer's aid. I want somebody who's going to stand up and fight and take these folks on, because, look, we're going to go through a couple years of pain and misery. We know that. We understand that we're not going to be able to stop much of what Trump and Elon and the Doge ferrets are up to. But at least we should be organizing around the suffering and the chaos that they're causing, so that on the other end, we grab the reins in a way, working people grab the reins and have already got the solutions in hand on day one, in 3.5 years, when we take over and undo this mess and move towards a better way forward. At least that's my hope out of all of this.
No, I agree. And it's, something I've seen, since I've been of voting age is, people are upset with the Democratic Party, people who have, been on their side and, pushing back against any sort of substantive criticism of how they're doing things. People do not like what Chuck Schumer is doing. Even Nancy Pelosi was throwing shade at him, saying, if it was me, I wouldn't have given up something for nothing.
Yep.
So it's a reckoning, and a lot of the organizing and activism work, the new resistance movie we're seeing is a lot of grassroots work, protesting at Tesla, holding different sort of protests, and, in the next couple of weeks there are even more. And the leadership of the Democratic Party, the opposition we're supposed to be having, really doesn't have their thumb on the pulse of how and why people are so upset about what's being done.
Have you been surprised or interested at how the shift has happened around Tesla? Because I know a lot of my lefty friends, they all got to get me a Tesla a couple of years ago. Now they want to burn them up and dump what all over them. And now you got Donald Trump, who was against EVs, now out there basically hawking them in the White House. It's a weird kind of flip, I think.
It's really, and it's just hypocritical on just all sides, because Tesla was purported to be this leader in getting the U.S. to renewable energy, while the Trump administration is just slashing anything to do with climate science and denying that global warming even exists, even as we still break harrowing climate records.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see some of my redneck friends with, who had the big, coal rolling diesel trucks, switch it over to the Tesla truck. See the Confederate flag hanging from the back there. Because that's how weird of a time we're in, and just how weird we've gotten, I think. It's I'm waiting for that first one. I'm waiting for that.
I haven't seen them here in Florida, but if I'm going to start posting pictures if I do. So
I don't know who would buy a Tesla truck. Never mind. But look, I was not a Tesla supporter from the beginning because of what Musk said years and years ago. He said they were not a car company. We're a data company. We're a data and technology company. We just happen to make cars because they're collecting all of your data everywhere you drive. They're collecting your data. This handover of government to Elon Musk is one of the scariest things of all of this to me. And I look at NASA as part of this. We couldn't get the astronauts off the space station. Had to send, I guess, Elon to the rescue. And good, I'm glad those guys are back. But the fact that we've handed the richest man in the world the keys to our space agency and we're shutting down parts of NASA, it's really, really scary.
There's such stark conflicts of interest. SpaceX is NASA's largest federal contractor. They've given SpaceX billions and billions of dollars. Trump has nominated a SpaceX investor and a close friend of Elon Musk to head the agency. They appointed a longtime SpaceX employee to serve as advisor to the administrator right now, who is a big fan of Elon Musk. And they recently shut down a couple offices, the office of the chief scientist, that were experts meant to provide analysis and strategies and in a bipartisan, unbiased manner, and they got rid of them. And one of the workers I spoke to who was part of that said, this is just a way, we don't understand why they're doing this before actual, reduction in force orders. This is like rushed and an immediate thing. And it just appears to be a way for any possible detractors to Elon Musk and SpaceX to get removed from the agency before the takeover is finally in place. So right. There are different agencies where that's the same case. So Elon Musk is still the CEO of SpaceX. He's still the CEO of Tesla, where his salary is billions and billions of dollars, where he's clearly not doing a full-time job for that position, and that's over half of the company's annual revenue. He's still fighting in court for that over $50 billion annual salary from Tesla itself. It's just all these different things in motion. These are just red flags, and it's really concerning that this isn't focused enough in the media on how ridiculous and corrupt this is, and two, that just his supporters of the far right don't seem to rubber stamp anything that he says or does. Conspiracy theories, lies, false claims that he's making about Social Security right now. It's just a harrowing, concerning time.
And you didn't even bring up, what is that, Starfleet or Space Earth or whatever the Starlink or whatever it is, who's going to be taking over what was supposed to be, part of Biden's infrastructure plan to get rural broadband into rural communities. They're gutting that. The fiber lines will not be laid into rural communities. They're going to get stuck with the crappy satellite that Elon's got. And evidently he's going to throw up about 42,000 of them in the hopes that maybe it'll be sunny on your day.
It's very, very concerning because, they have the power and influence. He just gave Trump another $100 million after the whole Tesla auto show in front of the White House lawn. The Trump administration seems to want to, be willing to just give Musk the reins of anything that he wants in terms of federal contracts or resources or funding is at his whim. He's a billionaire child in a candy store, able to take whatever he wants. And there are no checks and balances in place from you know, the administration or, you know, elected leaders in power right now, besides, you know, a handful of Democrats who have been sounding the alarm and writing letters. And, you know,
Writing letters, that's going to solve this. If you write enough letters, it's going to get there. I'm being facetious, quite frankly, but, you know, the reality is Democrats better do as I've been saying. They better adopt a Republican district, find some comfortable shoes, get out there, start talking to people, hold town halls, hold hearings, do whatever you got to do, but raise awareness to all of this craziness that's going on, that you're right, our mainstream corporate-controlled right-wing media is not paying attention to. And, you know, we could spend hours over the horrible stuff that they're doing. It's going to take us staying active, engaged, finding that thing that we're interested in and organizing around it. It is terrible. And the fact that we're handing off our space agency to one guy, just frightening. But, Michael, I appreciate the work that you do. Keep up the great work over there at The Guardian. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Rick.
Michael Sonato, labor reporter there at The Guardian US. Make sure you check out their website, theguardian.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A partly cloudy sky tonight, a low in the upper 20s. Looking mostly cloudy for tomorrow, maybe a shower or two in the afternoon, highs to the upper 40s. Then we're back into sun Saturday, cooler, highs upper 30s to 40. Rain and snow possible Sunday. Right now it's 33.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Musk is so arrogant that he is even intervening right here in the state of Wisconsin.
Republican Rep. Brian Stile said in a statement that Sanders was on a fear-mongering tour. Maybe you should be afraid when billionaires can buy the presidency, when billionaires can buy elections. I think that's a little scary. And
I think so.
We the people should do something about it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news. There's at least one member of Congress who has followed my command and has adopted a Republican district, and that is Democratic Representative Mark Pocan from Wisconsin. Evidently, he's gone after Derek Van Orden. It's their neighbors, so to speak. Took his show on the road on, I guess it was Wednesday night? Tuesday night. Hosted an event in his district, put out some pictures with about 300 people at a rally there in his district. And look, did what you have to do. Put the empty chair of Van Orden not being there. Slam Republicans for going after cuts to vital social safety net programs like Social Security. Do what you got to do. Get into those Republican districts. Have them come out. Invite them to the front. You know, this is how Democrats are going to win back Republican voters. And you go, but Rick, we don't need them. Yeah, you do. This idea of we're just going to get out our base didn't work. You need to. It's one thing to preach to the choir, but you got to put more seats, more butts in the pews. And that means getting more people into the church. And this is how Democrats can do it. And you need to do it by talking about issues that are important to working people. Enough of the culture war, enough of the craziness, enough of all of the devices. What's going to put food on the table? What's going to keep a roof over people's heads? And what's going to give people opportunity? And then how do we take care of each other in our community? As I've been saying, look, you're not going to stop Trump. I can spend the entire hour talking about all the horrible things Trump is doing. I could talk about all of the things his executive orders are doing, all of the harm that they're doing to agency after agency, department after department, the assaults on workers' rights, the assaults on consumers, the assaults on seniors and the disabled. I could talk about that for days. It's not going to change anything. What has to happen is we've got to get angry, we've got to get motivated, and we've got to get organized. And it's by doing this, this kind of outreach, adopting a Republican district and getting in there. Today, for instance, in my state of Pennsylvania, the People's Town Hall was in PA, where they went into Republican Representative Ryan McKenzie's district, the 7th Congressional District here. You know why? To talk about issues that are important to working people. And look, he's viewed as a fairly vulnerable Republican House member. Maybe in the next year and a half, when election time comes around, maybe that seat gets flipped. Maybe Democrats take back the House of Representatives and we add some checks and balances here. Maybe you get a chance to, and I'm not saying this is the way we're going, but maybe you get enough votes in the House and maybe in the Senate, if enough people get upset, to, if Trump continues the illegal behavior and not following the courts, you throw the bum out. Maybe, just maybe. And look, by then, I think the Republican Party will be ready to get rid of Trump anyway, because they want J.D. Vance anyhow, because ideological, just probably worse than Trump, but not as charismatic, unless you like the eyeliner. Now, as I've been saying, the organizing that has to happen is what's important to you, what's important to each one of us. Is it Social Security? Is it Medicare? Is it Medicaid? Is it labor rights? Is it women's rights? Is it LGBTQ plus rights? Is it trans rights? Is it any of that? Get involved in figuring out how to organize around that and then come up with an idea, policies, to tell Democrats this is what we demand. Not waiting for Democrats. Look, this is what has been bugging me over the last couple of years, but especially recently as people have been going, Rick, you're too hard on Democrats. No, politicians are tools. I've always viewed politicians as tools. I like them. I like some of them. I think some of them are better than others. I think some of them are horrible. Generally, if you have an R behind your name, you're horrible. But if you got a D behind your name, doesn't mean you're a saint. It means you're less bad than the R. And we need to come up with that. We need to remember that they're doing our work. They're not leading us. They're doing what we want. And again, this is one of those civics things that I remember from high school civics. You know, there are representatives. They're not our leaders. And the quicker we come around to that, the quicker we come around to the reality that they better be doing what we want them to do, or we throw their out on their sanctimonious little behinds, the better I think we're all going to be. This idea of, you know what? We should want a decent livable wage. You know, talk about what Trump's doing. Trump, you know, undid what Biden did on the federal contractor rulings. You know, the federal contractors had it was $17.75 for a minimum wage. If you're going to have a federal contract, you got to pay at least $17.75, which seems sane, rational, seems like good policy, seems high road employment, seems like, hey, you know, maybe we could pressure the private sector to match that. Well, Trump's undone it. So back to 7.25 for you. And even that's too much in their world. So for me, if minimum wage is your issue, organize around that. Demand a $17.75 or $20 an hour minimum wage. For me personally, right now in the moment I'm in my life, look, I've always been a labor activist. I've always believed that the way we reunite this country is to reunionize this country, to give people the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, to empower people in the workplace, to ensure that no matter what color your skin, what kind of hair you got, if you walk funny or if you walk upside down, if you do a job, you get paid equal pay. You are treated the same. Every contract I've ever been a part of, it's who's ever doing the job gets the wage, the benefits, the conditions. Doesn't matter who or what you are. And I don't care who or what you are. We should be fighting for that. And vigorously, everybody, No matter what your issue is, everyone should be behind the labor movement. Everyone. Because we all have to work for a living. And understanding that if conditions are allowed to deteriorate to the point to where they are now, where most people are working for wages and benefits that are substandard from where they were 20, 30, 40 years ago, there's an opportunity to organize people. Now, for me, most recently, as many of you know, we've had a tragedy in our family. My wife, back in September, was involved in a motorcycle accident. A woman driving a van made a left-hand turn out of the blue for no reason, no warning, and has basically changed our lives forever. My wife will never be the person she was ever again. And for that, because of that, I am going to be spending a lot of time fighting for disability rights. I've always been on the side of disability rights. I've always been on the side of people who need help. Back in 2011, here in our state of Pennsylvania, we were marching in the Capitol to try and stop the then Republican Governor Tom Corbett from making drastic, draconian cuts to Health and Human Services that would harm people who desperately need it. And I remember the ODAPT folks who were all, they're wheelchair bound, rolling into the Capitol saying, look, if you're going to kill me, I'm going to die right here and you're going to watch it. If you're going to take what little I have that keeps my aid coming in so I can exist, you're going to watch it happen right here. And I agree with that. And while I was on the side of these folks and I was marching with them and I was supporting them 100%, I was quote unquote an ally. I'm now, unfortunately, not just an ally. We are living what the rest of my life, my wife's life, is going to be. And that is someone with a major, major disability. And what we're seeing right now out of this administration and a lot of Republican governors across this country is cuts to those programs. Medicaid being the first and foremost one. The massive Medicaid cuts that they're talking about, the painful Medicaid cuts they're talking about, are going to be taken from people who can least voice their opposition, from people who are the most vulnerable. You go after the elderly, you go after the disabled. When did we become a country that punches down? This administration, Donald Trump in particular, is the kind of bully. He's a bully, I understand. And bullies always punch down. Bullies always go after the weak, the vulnerable, those who can't defend themselves. And that's who Trump, Musk, and the little Doge ferrets, and all of them, that's what they're about. You don't see them going after people who could put up a fight. No. They're not going after corporate America. They're going after you, and they're going after me. I remember back in 2011 when we were fighting against the changes to Medicaid, where they wanted a pathetically low asset test. In fact, I just went through one of the most embarrassing, one of the most humiliating exercises of my life, and that is to talk to a Medicaid intake person about a Medicaid waiver for my wife. Invasive, angering. And to be honest, we're never going to get it. Because in this state, you can't have more than $8,000 in assets in your name. So we have to, in order for her to get any kind of care through the Medicaid system, we've got to be poverty ridden. We've got to spend everything down to get to that $8,000 number. And people do this across the country. And the advice that I've gotten from people is, well, you need to get divorced. What kind of a policy pushes for that? What kind of policy, what kind of structure, what kind of system do you have when that's your only real option? Now, I do know who did it. It's Republicans with the help of Democrats. Republicans, every time there's a social program that comes up, they water it down. They attempt to destroy it, poison pill it, however they can, to make sure fewer and fewer number of people are eligible to get help when they need it. What happened to my wife is a horrible tragedy. Couldn't be planned. Couldn't be expected. Nobody, especially not us, ever thought that could happen. And yet it did. And now we have to figure out how do we care for my wife in the best way possible? And we're doing that. But it shouldn't be the enormous burden in this country, the wealthiest country in the history of humanity, at its wealthiest moment. It shouldn't be this hard just to get help. Now, as I've said before, I'm fortunate. You know, we've got resources. I've got a good job. I've got really great health insurance through my union. We're going to be okay. The reason I bring this up is I can't imagine people who don't have resources and access to information and the ability to navigate these really complex, difficult systems, which are set up to keep you away. Now, do I understand why my red hat friends are upset a lot of the time? Yeah. We've made being poor, we've made being desperate really difficult. We've put so many obstacles in the way that most people, like me, just throw up our hands and go, oh, the heck with it. And then the anger comes when, you know, people who we view, again, punching downward as unworthy somehow are able to navigate the system because, well, they are poverty ridden. So my goals over the next year, 2, 5, 10 are going to be to ensure that my wife gets the help that she needs. That in the event that I pass, that there will be someone there to help. As a civil society, and I guess this is where I want to end this, as a civil society, is this the best we can do? A broken system, a system that its goal is to keep people away, to keep access and care away from people, as opposed to reaching out and helping. I've got friends in other countries, in the UK and in Canada, who say it's not this way. The first response is to help. Ours is, well, how can I profit from it? Because interestingly enough, as I was talking to the intake worker, every program has a case manager who has a dual purpose of ensuring that you get care, but that it doesn't cost too much. Because we've got a profit motive that we have to attain. It seems again, like an impossible dual task. But one, unfortunately, that our system, thank you, Republicans, and a handful of corporate Democrats for bringing us. And this is one of those moments where people go, well, but Rick, you know, why are you a Democrat? Well, one, not a Republican, because every Republican policy is about harming working people. Oh, I know. Tax cuts, Rick. Tax cuts. Yeah, not seeing it. And in fact, every one of their tax plan do what? Enriches the wealthy at the expense of the working class. And maybe someday we'll wake up to it. And maybe someday we'll wake up to the reality individually that Republican governance is all about screwing over you and me. I just hope it doesn't come after a tragedy like the one I had. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm really interested to hear what you got to say. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1854. That was the day that the founders of what became the Republican Party met in Ripon, Wisconsin. The idea was to form a new party opposed to the Southern labor system based on slavery. That July, the Republicans held their first convention in Michigan. Their motto became free soil, free labor, free men. But as historian Eric Foner has explained, proclaiming the superiority of free labor was easy. Implementing that vision proved more troublesome. Women and free black residents living in the North often found it difficult, if not impossible, to find safe, good-paying jobs in the so-called free labor system. 2 years after the new party was founded, Republicans ran their first presidential candidate, John C. Fremont. Fremont was a military man, explorer, and map maker of the American West. He carried 11 northern states, but failed to win the presidency. The next election, Republicans nominated Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln won 18 northern states, and for the first time, a Republican sat in the White House. With the victory of a free labor candidate, the country stood on the brink of civil war. The question of slave labor would be settled on the battlefield. In his first address to Congress, President Lincoln declared, "Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could have never existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration." Given the thoughts of the first Republican president, could you imagine a leader in the Republican Party making such a statement today?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So according to the Yale Budget Lab, Trump's tax cuts are going to benefit the rich people. And here's the thing, and this is the point that I'm making. Tax cuts come at the cost of everything else. We're giving Elon Musk, we're giving Jeff Bezos, we're giving Warren Buffett, we're giving the billionaire class more while we're, well, slashing and burning our social safety net programs. Medicaid being at the top of the list. This is what, in their words, would be an active transfer of money from low-income people to high-income people. This is robbing from the poor to give to the rich. This is Robin Hood in reverse. And again, this isn't new. This is what Republican tax plans have been for decades. Not new. We created this billionaire class. We created Elon Musk. We created all of our billionaires and all of the wealthy. We've created them by going, sure, you can have all of the money and you don't have any responsibility to society. You don't have any responsibility to your workers. Fire them at will, which is why they're going through what they're going through with the federal government, because they think they're entitled to it. They can treat workers however they want. And, you know, as I mentioned a while ago, you had the guy who was the head of OMB now, a Vought, saying, you know, I want workers terrified. I want them I want them to be unhappy. I want them to be miserable. I don't want them to come to work happy. Don't want them to come to work. Want them all to go. Want them all fired. Because they don't believe in treating people decent. We working people are merely tools for them. And you look at this tax plan. What's interesting to me is I've had people go, "Well, you know, Rick, Donald Trump's real tax plan." Like there's a secret tax plan, one that we don't know about, but what I've been told is no taxes for anyone under $180,000. And I'm going, in what world? Is that written down? Do we have legislation on that? No, you saw that on Fox News. That's cute. You now have new research. And this is one of those things that you just go, maybe someone will slap us and we'll figure it out. Maybe. I'm not going to hold my breath. But who knows? We'll see. But you got new research now that shows that, you know, Trump's tax schemes, what it's going to do is it's going to raise costs for people in the bottom 40%. You know, the folks who, remember, we're not going to tax tips. Generally, those are the folks in that tax bracket. Yeah, you're not going to tax it because they don't pay them anyway, because they don't make enough. And they're going to give people over $180,000 a massive, massive handout. Now, the messaging that I'm getting, understand, this is the weird world in which I live. I know this is what their tax plan is. I can tell you that the bottom quintile of folks, they're going to pay actually more in income tax, about $1,100 more. Whereas the top 1%, they're gonna line their pockets with about $180,000, maybe $181,000. And in the middle, you know, your taxes are still going up a little bit. You don't get to be like the top 10% before you get anything back out of this. This is who's important. It's not about helping you or me. It's about helping themselves. And they're helping themselves to more. So when you look at it from this perspective, that 100% of the net financial benefit goes to the top quintiles. Not to you and me, understand. Not to us, but to our billionaires, the ones we've already made wildly with. And understand, this is where the weird part for me is. They're now telling us that, there's a recession coming, but it'll be worth it. Because, we're going to change the economy and it's going to be worth it. Treasury Secretary Howard Lutnick said Trump's policies are worth it, even if it causes a recession. Yeah, you've got Scott Bennett, the Treasury Secretary. Treasury Secretary Lutnick's the Commerce Secretary. You've got Bessette coming out and saying, "Oh well, there's going to be a period of transition. Inflation, it's stubborn. You guys like eating." They're telling us what they're doing. They are without question going to cut taxes on the very wealthy and take from the very poor, the most vulnerable, because it's what they do. It's what they've been doing for years. And sadly, those of us in the middle, we've been apathetic at best. So the question is, and it goes back to, my high school government teacher. It's a which side are you on moment. As my high school government said when I asked him, how do you know which party you are? How do you know which way you lean? And his response was, Republicans are for big business and the rich. Democrats are for big social programs and the poor. And you folks in the middle, you're going to pay for all of them. So which are you closer to? Where do you align your values and your rights and your wants and your needs? Are you closer to rich or closer to poor? Now, I grew up in poverty. I knew where I was. I remember where I came from. And I don't want anyone else to have to go through that. Now I get, Rick, you're going to spend other people's money. Yeah. Yeah, we need a massive redistribution of wealth in this country. We've given way too much to way too few. And that wealth was created on the backs of the people who are getting way too little. The anger that's out there, and I keep saying this, the anger is real because the pain is real. The standard of living for most working people in this country has declined and is declining. And yes, inflation is a huge part of it, but so are poverty wages. So are desperation wages. So are disappearing health benefits. So are non-existent retirement benefits. What 30 years ago was taken for granted is now a luxury and almost the dinosaur. I have a defined benefit pension, a dinosaur in today's world. How do we make sure that we fight for policies that make lives better? This is where the organizing that I'm talking about has to come from. This is where you, me, us, finding each other in the streets and demanding. Not Mother May I, please, could I have something? Demanding through our representatives with policies that we demand they pass. It's what the rich people do. You want money for your campaign? Yeah, I got a problem. I had a friend who was a former congressman said, nobody ever bought my vote, but they got my ear 15 minutes at a time. So every time I said, hey, I need some money, they go, since I got you on the phone, I got this problem. What do you think? And he's like, I can see my way. Okay, I'll write you a check. Didn't buy his vote, just had his ear. Now, that rich guy going after something, was that for you or for him? Do you think you got any benefit from him saying, I got a problem, can you help me out? And I'll write you a nice check. Does that work for you? So yeah, we got a lot of problems. They've got a lot of money. But we have out-procreated them. They're more of us. We can do something about it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@therickSmithshow.com. miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump signs an executive order aimed at dismantling the Department of Education. CBS's Linda Kenyon.
Surrounded by children seated at school desks, President Trump said the Department of Education is a failing enterprise.
We rank near the bottom of the list in terms of success.
Closing a government agency requires congressional approval, and Republicans are planning legislation. But the president knows Democrats are not on board.
I hope they're going to be voting for it, because ultimately it may come before them.
Trump says core functions of the Education Department, like Pell Grants, will be handled by other agencies. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
The NTSB recommends 68 bridges in the U.S. be evaluated for risk of collapse, including the Golden Gate and Brooklyn bridges. CBS's Chris Van Cleve says when it comes as the NTSB says last year's deadly Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore could have been prevented if vulnerability.